I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, this week's episode of the Lords Cricket Podcast comes to you from the home dressing room at Lords. What a place to record the episode, and what a person to record it with. I sat down with Darren Goff in that home dressing room and chatted about his 5-wicket haul here at Lords and his England career. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Darren.
Hi, guys.
You all right?
Yeah.
How's it feel to be back?
Yeah, fantastic, mate. Lovely view. Best view in the house, isn't it? Overlooking the ground from the dressing room. It's a special dressing room. You could tell we're in London because it's a lot better upholstery than when you get up at Headingley. It's fantastic. Great place to come. Every player wants to play here, wants the privilege of being in the home dressing room. Most of us might have played in an away one, but to come in the home one, you know you're playing for England.
You're listening to the Lords Cricket Podcast with me, Will Rowe. These are the stories from the home of cricket with the people that made them. Joining me today is an absolute legend of English cricket. It's Darren Goff.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Nice to be back in the dressing room.
It is. Every time I come back in here, it's special. From the first game I played way back in 1989. To now doing an interview, a podcast with you, so yeah, special place. Obviously, Yorkshire came here with Yorkshire. It was a different dressing room, but for England, always sat in the corner, walked through the main door in the dressing room, to the right, bang, that's my corner, right next to the window. Other corner opposite, Alex Stewart, and we remained there for the rest of them. Where you sat at this moment, right in the middle of the room near the doors, that was in Mike Atherton and Andrew Flintoff's spot. So everybody had their spot. It was really, really weird, and you only got a new spot if one of those guys got the elbow and he wasn't picked.
Who was in your spot before then?
I've no idea, but I nicked it as soon as I came in. I can't remember, but Andy Carrick sat by me as well. He sat to the right of me. I sat right near that corner window, and I loved that spot. I got a good view of the cricket if I wanted to watch it. Most of the time I was on a physio bed watching TV up in the corner, but like I say, a special place.
On the 20th of April in 1989, a young Darren Goff makes his first-class debut for Yorkshire. In those days, it was a three-day county championship, and it was against Middlesex here at Lords. The 18-year-old Darren, as you can imagine, takes to it like a duck to water.
To come here was obviously a special occasion. Everybody kept telling me. I'd seen it on TV. I came down on the train, stayed in the hotel just across the road. Bacon sandwich. I even remember what I had on the first morning. In fact, two bacon sandwiches, a cup of English breakfast tea.
Nice.
Came out here and made my debut against Middlesex. Never forget it.
How did it go? I think you picked up, was it Paul Downton? Was he your first class wicket?
Caught side bottom, second slip.
That's Arnie side bottom.
Arnie side bottom, yeah, not Ryan. I played with his son as well. I did quite a few father-son combinations throughout my career. But that was the first, obviously. And I actually bowled, it was always this end. I bowled this end at the pavilion end. And just a little outswinger to Paul Downton, who opened the batting for Middlesex in those days. Just a little outswinger, caught the outsider, Johnny side bottom, caught it low to his right. But I was only kind of, I wasn't quick then, I was really a swing bowler, so the conditions early season were perfect for my type of bowler, bowling about 82 miles an hour, little bit of swing, green tinge to the pitch, and it was a nice delivery.
And you also, I think you got Mike Gatting out in that match as well.
Second innings.
Yeah.
I can't remember, who else did I get out in the first? It might have been one of the tail enders. Was it Norman Cowan rings a bell?
You got Court Bairstow, Bold Goff. Yeah, Norman Cowan.
I'm surprised I remembered that. I think the second innings, this is purely guesswork, and see how I go, because you'll probably got the scorecard. I think
right here, yeah.
John Carr.
Second innings, caught by Bold Goff.
Yep,
for 31.
That one. Got John Carr, got Mike Gatting.
Yep, caught Blakey Bold Goff.
Yep. Third one, haven't got a clue. Angus Fraser?
Well, no, he only took two wickets, so that was it. Yeah, second innings.
Oh, I got three in the first.
Three in the second. Yeah, three for 44 in the first. It was Paul Downton. Who else did you pick up? Ken Brown?
Yep, Brownie. I remember that now.
Caught Bairstow, Bold Goff. So yeah, that was your Yorkshire debut, and it was here at the home of cricket. You've had quite a love affair with this ground, but I want to go back to the start, where it all started. 1970, you were born in Monk Bretton in Barnsley. What was life like growing up for Darren Goff?
Yeah, it was interesting. I think my mum and dad always worked hard. My dad had loads of jobs, number of jobs. Anything from delivering machinery to a milkman, and then became a rat catcher, what they used to call it. That's what the headline was on my...
That was a bit unfair, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, son of a Barnsley rat catcher, which he actually was, what do they call it now? Technician, don't they? So he's gone on to do well in business, have his own business, doing that sort of stuff, pest control. And yeah, it was a bit unfair, the headline. David Bairstow, I remember, didn't take too well to that headline. He cornered the journalist and told him what he thought of him. Thought it was out of line. But listen, like most kids where I'm from, most of us grew up playing sport on the streets, whether it were Wimbledon, we'd play tennis, athletics, we'd all run up and draw our own athletics track. Yeah. We'd go up to the park, put the shirts down and play football every single day. In the cricket season, we'd play a bit of cricket. So that was basically my upbringing, was just being on a cul-de-sac, a street with a load of guys and girls, just playing sport all the year round. Nothing else but sport. That was my life.
It was very outdoorsy. You were a massive football fan. You said if you had your brother's pace, if you had Adrian's pace, you would have been a footballer. Is that true?
Yeah, my brother. Listen, I feel for my brother a bit, because it was very hard for him to follow.
Yeah.
When the oldest one has gone and has a success as a sportsman, I think it's very, very hard for the younger one to follow. Now, he's as talented at sport as me, without a doubt. Very talented at football. Played for Yorkshire, played for England, schools, colleges, football. He ran the 100 metres, which was pretty good. He had a left foot on him. Because my family is very mixed up like that. I mean, I write left-handed, play cricket right-handed. I'm with my feet, I can kick just as well with both. It's really, really weird, confusing sometimes, because when I play racket sports, I never know which hand to use.
Yeah.
I have to serve with my right as the power, but then I swap hands, so I'm always playing forehand.
What, you serve right-handed and swap to left-handed?
Yeah, both left forearm, left-handed, and right-hand forearm.
Right, got
which
you.
Which really, really confuses people. And even doing table tennis, I'm that quick at swapping hands.
You're just averse to a backhand.
Yeah, I just don't like... If I have to backhand, I have to do it left-hand.
Right.
Which is weird, isn't it? So like I said, very confusing. My brother's left, all left. And he was very, very quick. He played cricket for Barnsley. He played football, obviously, to a very high level. He ran to a very high level. And he still does triathlons now, and he's 3 years younger than me, so he's a fit lad. Totally opposite to me, full stop.
So in the summer of 1994, Darren makes his England debut against New Zealand at Old Trafford in the final test of a three-match series. He takes six wickets and is picked for the next game at Lord's against South Africa, who are playing their first test in England since the apartheid era. England were captained by Mike Atherton, with the likes of Alex Stewart, Graham Gooch, Phil De Freitas and Angus Fraser in the starting 11. We chat about that game and how Darren's larger-than-life persona fits into the dressing room.
I think when I'm in a group, it brings out that that extrovert kind of that's inside me.
Yeah.
But I very much like my own space as well. So when we do the personality testing, which came at later dates, I'm very much where I was in the middle. because I do like my own space. I am a different person when I'm away from the spotlight to when I'm in it. But you put me in a dressing room and, yeah, it comes out. I was there to... I believe I was born to entertain, whether it was to football, to cricket, to Saturday night television. That's what I wanted to do, and this was where I was in my prime, within a dressing room, going out there, playing for your country. I think we came up against a very, very strong South African side. That South African side from 92 through to probably about 98, 99 was very, very strong. They had a great pace attack. They had a good leader at that time, two good leaders, Kapler Wessels, who was coming to an end, and obviously the next one to follow him was Hansie Cronje. So they were very, very strong, competitive, wanted to prove to the world what we'd been missing for so long. And they did. they beat us quite comfortably that game. Arnold Donald was one of the quickest guys I ever faced. Absolutely top quality performer. And it was a pleasure to play against them. It was really, really hard work. And I think in that game, actually, I might have actually... I'm not so sure if it was that series or one later where Alan Donald, I think, broke my finger. So I actually missed the test. I think I retired hurt in the second innings. And I think I broke my finger that game.
Donald again, he's in now, he bowls, and that's played down nicely by Gough, past short leg Liebenberg, and they go for a single. So... And that hit Gough on the hand.
On his bowling hand.
On his bowling hand, too. He whipped his glove off, and he pulls it on again now. I don't think he's... From what we've seen, so well, he's pulled it off again now, the glove. Maybe he is in a little bit of trouble.
And in that 94 Test match, it was actually quite a controversial one because it was Mike Atherton's dirt in the pocket affair. What did you think to that coming in? Just like
weird, because I remember the conversation we had, and this is honest truth, because I think it was slightly taken out of it. Mike Atherton really was a leader, like I say, in a team that was in a lot of transition. We were losing a lot of games. But at home we were pretty strong in one day cricket, but Test, like I said, it was all over the shop. There was no continuity. We had no real plan. He was the captain. Ian Salisbury was bowling. It was a hot day and I was bowling at the other end. And we had a conversation, but listen, I've just got the ball reversing, because I was the first type who people remember who used to bowl very similar to some of the Pakistani bowlers, Akam and Wakad, who had such an influential product, weren't they, with that in-swing and reverse-swing. I think it was 91 or 92 they toured here in England. And I copied that, and that's what turned the corner for me. So he was reversing, and I thought, oh, I'm in the game here. But whatever you do, keep the ball dry. Now, yeah. Others, I don't know if anybody knows Others, he's a really clammy-type guy of his hands. And if you see a spinner sometimes, and Ian Salisbury too, clammy hands... They put the hand on the foot crease, don't they, just to keep the hand dry. So basically, Others thought he could put some dirt in his pocket, and every time his hands were clammy, he'd just rub his hands rather than keep going down, because it'd look bad. But hey, it looked really bad, didn't it? Putting his hand in his pocket, grabbing out some dirt, and putting it on his hands. And I honestly believed, and I do to this moment, and knowing Others, and I think people who know him really know Mike Atherton, would say it was an innocent mistake, but it didn't look good, did it? Let's be honest about it. So I think it's one thing he'll probably regret, but that's the way I saw what happened. But it did help me, actually. I think I got 4-4.
Gough, nice short approach. Bowls pulled by Hudson in the air, and Gooch running around at the fine leg. Takes a great catch.
And Gough, who's no doubt perspiring a little, dries his hand on the back of his trousers and sets off again from this pavilion end. And bowls to Peter Kirsten. That beats him as appeal for a catch. Kirsten is not moving, but Dickie Bird is now seeing him on his way. The finger goes up.
Gough in and bowls to Wessels, who drives outside the off stump. The appeal. Wessels is gone. You got 4-4 in both innings. So this is your first Test match at Lords. I think the honours boards would have been up by then. I think they were put up in around 91, 92.
Yeah.
On a personal note, I mean, the team got beat quite comfortably in the end. 356 runs, it was a bit of a mauling.
Yeah.
But personally, you must have been thinking, just one wicket each time away from getting up there.
Of course, a desperate to get on the board. I think... There's certain grounds you go along to in your life, which I came on throughout most of my career, and I thought, where do I want to get 5 wickets? When I look back now, I think, where are the real places I wanted to do it? Lords, the home of cricket. Headingley, my home of cricket, because that's where I play most of the sport. SCG, very similar to Lords, the home of Australian cricket. And Melbourne, 90,000 people in there. For me, realistically, there were 4 places. If I could pick 4 places to get 5 for, that would be it.
Yeah.
And I achieved it. And Lords was the last one for me. And I thought I was never going to get on there. I'd done it in a one-day game.
Goff bowls outside the off stump, and Elliot flirts with it, and he's caught at second slip.
Steve Waugh has 17, and Darren Goff is bowling from the pavilion end. Away he goes and bowls to Waugh now. He's edged and beautifully caught. What a catch. Edged and out. Knight takes the catch at second slip. A third wicket for Darren Goff.
Goff bowls again. Oh, and Waugh can't go hit on the pad. He's out. He's out. He's over. He's gone. Well bowled, Darren Goff.
Goff bowls again. Gillespie goes for a mighty hit and is caught at mid-off.
That was in 1997. You took 5 for 44 against the Aussies in an ODI, but no honours board.
No honours board. You keep telling me you're going to change that. You're going to put up a one-day honours board, which would be fantastic, because I'd be on that as well. But I do remember that game. It was special. I think it's still the best one-day figures here.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm still... And when you walk round, it's a proud thing, because you see your figure, you see the name up at the far side under the media centre. You see your placard, it says D Goff 5 for 44 against Australia. It says the year 97. And it's special. It really, really is. And every time you come back to Lords, you're reminded of it.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
As Darren just mentioned, he still has the best figures by an Englishman at Lord's in a one-day international, with 5 for 44 against Australia in 1997. In fact, he's the only England bowler to take a one-day 5-wicket haul at the ground, but he's still yet to do it in a test match at Lord's. 4 years later, it comes. In 2001, England are now captained by Nasser Hussain and playing Pakistan. It's time to put things right.
Well, realistically, I thought 31, like I say, I was at my peak. I think I got player of the series, a few test series in a row. I was flying. And that year, I had an unbelievable year, obviously the summer. And I thought this could be, well, truly, you never know what's around the corner. I said, I'm 31 now, I've got to somehow get on that board. And it happened very quickly against Pakistan, a good Pakistan side when you look at them. That series, they had some top players, Saeed Anwar, Inzi, I think, played.
Yeah, that
Yusuf, yep. Yoana, it's Mohamed Yusuf now.
Yunis Khan was in that team.
Yunis Khan, they had a good side, a real, real strong team, and an unbelievable pace attack. It was Akhtar, Yunis, and Akram.
Yep.
Now that's pretty. Was it Mahmood as well?
And Azhar Mahmood.
Pretty special ball attack, that, let me tell you, in English conditions. So to do it at Lord's against a very good Pakistan team was special. And it happened very quickly, really, towards the end. I think Carrick bowled, was it Carrick who bowled well that game as well?
Yeah.
He was already on the board. And he was sniffing again, so I had to be quick because he'd stopped me on a few occasions. I think he'd stopped me against Zimbabwe. I ended up with four for there against Zimbabwe in a one-off test. We played two test series here in Trent Bridge. He stopped me getting on the board that day when I knocked the first four over and I never got back on. And he cleaned up and got on the board. And like I said, to get on there and against a very, very good team as well, was satisfying.
Here's Goff again. Oh, that's in the end. He's caught there by Arthur Little slip. He felt for it. And it flew low, about chest high to Atherton, who, the secret of that, Atherton stayed down until the ball was there. He took it in his chest, but he was very much on his haunches. And that is a very important wicket for Darren Goff. Here comes Goff in bowls. Oh, and the big appeal, Robbie's out! He's gone, Johanna. He went to play that to leg. I think he was across the line, and Goff appealed, and umpire Willie gave him out without much hesitation. Johanna walks slowly back towards the pavilion, a disappointed man.
Yeah, so that five-wicket haul, you did the sort of classic. You got the top order, and then you wrapped up the tail. So Saeed Anwar, Court Atherton, bowled Goff. Mohammed Yusuf, LBW Goff. It just came back down the slope, yeah. I think.
Classic Goff delivery. Meant to swing out, nip back. Oh, sorry.
And then it was Rashid Latif, Court Stewart, bowled Goff. It's all strangled down the leg side, that one.
Yeah, I remember. But I did him in the second innings, caught behind as well with a good delivery. Don't worry about that.
At that point, the umpires brought you in for lunch. And then you came back out to resume your over, and it was Waqar Yunus, Court Thorpe at third slip, bowled Goff, and then Shoaib Akhtar the next ball, bit of late swing, cleaned up. Five for.
Yep.
And that's down the leg side, they appeal for a catch, and he's given himself out. So Darren Goff has taken his 200th test wicket, his victim is Rashid Latif.
Goff bowls again, oh, it's in the air, he's out, he's Waqar's out, he's caught there by Thorpe, falling across to his left in front of Triscothic. Waqar drove, got the edge, and that is a very important wicket for England. And now Pakistan really are going to have a fight on their hands if they're going to avoid the follow-on. Here comes Goff in, bowls. Oh, he bowled him! Shoaib Akhtar just put forward, Goff has hit the stumps. Pakistan all out for 203. Shoaib out, first ball, bowled Goff for naught. Wasim Akram is 19 not out. And Alex Stewart will now have... He's waving to the Pakistan dressing room. I thought he would have enjoyed the trip along the corridor at Lord's to knock on the room when they said, come in. You can say, now I'm going to invite you to bat again.
I think that's brilliant, Henry. I certainly wouldn't be waving to the balcony to tell them to bat. I might want to make that trip up the stairs into their dressing room and knock on the dressing room door and say, Pakistan, you can bat again. But that's fantastic bowling from Darren Goff. That's what is one of his trademark deliveries. Foolish ball, defeating Shoaib Akhtar, all ends up, and Pakistan defeated for 203, and no doubt will be following on.
Lords, for me, I always probably delivered most of the time. There's a couple of times I didn't. One was my last game, which is not surprising I didn't deliver then. I was really on the downward slope in Test cricket, but come then, I thought after that I'd get on again. I really, really did, honestly. But unfortunately for me, that winter was the moment where injuries struck, and it was the start of a long journey and a few operations to try and get back on the park.
So England wrap up victory over Pakistan by an innings and 9 runs. Darren's on cloud number 9, but as you were just hearing, injury soon strikes. In the winter of 2002, during an ODI against New Zealand in Dunedin, he tears the cartilage in his right knee. It's not good. That year he undergoes 3 operations, but sadly he never truly recovers. Even to this day, Darren still suffers with that knee. The next summer, South Africa, captained by a young Graham Smith, are in town, and England are keen to get their strike bowler back on the park.
Came back at the start of 2003. I'd only played a few games, got picked in the one days. And I did well against, I think it was South Africa. Yeah, it was South Africa. Obviously, we played in the final here, and I did Callis and Herschel Gibbs in the final. So I performed really, really well. And then I'd been replaced in the England side, obviously, because of the injuries. I've not been playing county cricket. And I was fine with it, and I was going to go back to Yorkshire, have a couple of, the plan was to have with the team, because my knee had swollen up a little bit. And by then, I was travelling to Germany to have it drained every 2 weeks or so. So the plan was to go and get my treatment, ongoing treatment, and just chill out for a while, and then get back to strength work and go back to playing county cricket. A few injuries. They saw me do well in the one day as the ball was swinging around, and they picked me for Edgbaston in the test. So I'm not going to say no. And I played in it, and it was flat. Oh, it was flat. It seemed for the first half an hour where I looked like I was going to get a wicket every ball, because I was still a very skillful bowler, but I just didn't have the pace. That 90 miles an hour average speed around 87, 88 had gone. I was now back down to where I started as a swing bowler. I was around the 83s, 82, 83. We could get up there when I got warmed up, but it took me a while to get going. Graham Smith obviously got a double there. I got one wicket dipping out, which wasn't a great delivery. I think it was caught square leg. And then it was back to back at Lords, and they picked me again, which I couldn't quite believe. I should have said no, played, and it was to be the end. I knew as soon as I walked off the pitch at the end of play, it was my decision. I walked in the dressing room, I packed my bag, I didn't say anything to anybody about what had just happened. I told NASA.
Yeah.
Then I rung the chairman of selectors, David Graveney. And I just told him on the way home, I said, that's it, I don't want to play, I can't play anymore, I'm no longer the bowler I was. I said, I bowl at 87 to 90 miles an hour, I can't do that, and there's no way I'm just going to steal a living playing test match cricket when I can't do it.
Gough berthed him, and this time he drives, and this is his 150, past Harmison at mid-off, going up towards the extra cover boundary. It'll be cut off just in front of the tavern stand, and they run free. So not only has Smith reached 152, but South Africa have reached 300 for the loss of only one wicket in reply to England's 173.
I said, because that is destroying everything I've built throughout my career about knocking over tail, reverse swing, in-swinging Yorkers. Couldn't do it anymore. So, yeah, I could have probably gone out of this test match, had a few months off, and then gone away in the winter again. I might have got stronger. Something could have happened. But I walked off, packed my bag, rang David Graveney in the car, and just said, sorry, mate, that's it, the end of me. I released the statement instantly. And I said, I'll carry on playing one day. I'd just got, done really, really well in the final. And it was a good decision for a while. I mean, went away, and I performed really well for England in one day cricket for another few years. But test cricket was never to be again. And I think it surprised a lot of people, but I just didn't take time out and get my leg strong again. But it was never, leg was never going to get better.
Yeah.
I've gone on since then. The moment I retired, about 18 months later, I had the cartilage totally out. After I've had five operations and it had not worked, so then I had that one and it totally out. And still going on now, I've had, since I retired, I've had two ops. My third one was only this last year, when I had a called an osteotomy, so I've got seven screws now in my right femur to support my knee. And that's not the end. At some point, and this all happened from 2001, twisting in the footholds on my right knee, and since then I was never the same bowler.
Was that painful for you coming off here at Lords, knowing that that was it?
Because of course it was, yeah.
You were someone that had given so much for England and played with so much passion and desire.
Of course it was. Like I said, between 96 and 2001, I was one of the best bowlers in the world. I think I got up to number two, or might have even got to number one in one day cricket, I'm not quite sure. But I was up there. I was taking wickets every series. I was up with, for winning the player of the series, every single series. And I left 150 test wickets out there. Absolutely. 31 struck down. You take out the two tests I come back for after three or four operations. Weren't the same. I was never going to be the same. 2001, getting injured in New Zealand, in Dunedin, in a one-day game. That ended my test career, basically. Didn't think it at the time, because you think you're invincible. But never got back to the bowler I was. And, yeah, of course it's sad. Of course it is. I say I left at least 150 test wickets out there. And for a bowler in my era to go and get 400 test wickets would have been unheard of. I think now, I think we're going to see it a lot, because guys now don't have to play, they just don't play county cricket, not like us guys did in yesteryear, back in my day.
Yeah.
I hate saying that, but it is. Back in our day, we had to play a test, go back and play your county, go back and play a test one day, and it catches up with you.
Sitting here now in this dressing room, does it feel like only yesterday you were here, or does it feel a longer time ago? Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's been a long time now. 15 years.
Yeah.
15 years since I played my last test here. Every time I come back here, I still think about some of the good times. I still think about some of the bad times. What I would have liked to have done is played here in a final. I missed the final here because of that injury. When Yorkshire played here in one of the CNG, would it have been, I think, final. I missed that. But other than that, playing every test, every one day here was special. I remember the first game in the World Cup against Sri Lanka. Played that here, which we won. I think I got Jason Rea, who opened the batting. That was one of the first wickets, caught slip. So that was a special moment, first game on World Cup. So, I had some great memories there.
And your England career, you finished with 229 wickets from the 58 tests. As you say, you should have played more test matches, but you are still England's 12th overall wicket taker. And I was getting a bit stato before this podcast. If you do people that have played 60 tests or less, or fewer, you're third on the list. So it's Graham Swan, he's 60 tests, 255 wickets. Alec Bedser, 51 tests, 236, and then yourself. So, I mean, in terms of guys that didn't play more than 60 tests, you're sort of top of the tree, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty special. I knew that. Like I said, I'd like to erase the last two tests out of my career. I really would, because I think my test career ended in 2001. But the two tests I played in 2003 were just basically a swan song. And when I look back now, I wish I wouldn't have played them. But it was the reality check to realise. But the step up, which a lot of people don't realise, between county cricket and test cricket, people still can't get it. They still think, a lot of guys who have never played it think, yeah, I probably should have played for England. It's not that easy. The step up is absolutely massive. Second team to first team, it's not that big. Trust me, it's not that big. You go from first class cricket to test cricket, it's a mountain. It really, really is. And I worked that out the hard way, coming back from injuries, to try and come back into something I was dominating at the time, to thinking, whoa, what's happened? And that is the gap. That's how big the gap is.
In the final part of the podcast, Darren and I chat about England in the 90s, his memory and annoyance that that team has often been remembered as a failure.
Even now, people say, oh yeah, you played in that rubbish side in the 90s. No, it wasn't rubbish at all. Come 96 onwards, that was a very, very strong team. It became settled. We beat most teams. The only team we couldn't beat was the greatest Australian team that's ever lived. They were ridiculous, that Australian team. For about 6-7 years, they were just almost unbeatable. And other than that, we competed and beat almost everyone. We went to Pakistan and won, we went to Sri Lanka and won. That was never heard of. People said, oh yeah, you're not going to win over there, you're going to have spinners. Well, we bowled them out with seam. And I had decent series again in Pakistan and in Sri Lanka. And that was a very good team, and I were proud to play with every single one of them. And I don't think we get the credit we actually deserve, because it's all 2005 on, isn't it? That's where the credit came. I could totally get it, because they won the Ashes. And we waited so long for it. But there were some good teams before that.
And just to finish on that side, of those guys that you played with, who was your sort of best mate in the dressing room?
Do you know something? I got on absolutely everyone. But when I first started my first Aussie tour, I mated around with Devon Malcolm, Phil De Freitas. They were my closest guys when I first started. Obviously, Craig White, who I roomed with a lot, played at Yorkshire with him. Robert Croft became a good mate of mine, very close with him. Dominic Cook was a good friend. We lived together from being 19 in New Zealand, so we always had a close bond. Andy Carrick, for all the criticism we get about me and Andy saying we didn't get on, and some of the people have wrote in their books, absolute comical. Me and Caddy, yes, we had a friendly rivalry, but night before a test match, me and Caddy, date night, always went to the cinema together. Alan Mullally tried to join in that. He came with us as well when we went on certain tours he was selected for. But me and Caddy were close, and we've kept in touch since we retired. I've been down to see him, obviously, where he lives in Somerset, and we've remained pretty close throughout. So all that stuff you read about me and Andy, it's absolute bull.
I love that idea of Goff and Caddick on a date night the night before a test.
Hey, Diet Coke and popcorn, mate. El Nacho Grandes, can't beat it.
Fantastic stuff. Well, Darren, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. This has been the Lords Cricket Podcast, where we've been talking about your 5 for 61 special moment. It's been a special ground for you. So, yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to the Lords Cricket Podcast with me, Will Rowe, and that was the Darren Goff story. It was great fun to sit down with Darren. He was a childhood hero of mine, and it was really quite surreal to be in the home dressing room at Lords, sitting opposite him and just chatting about his England career. He's someone that when you watched as a child, I'd go to watch him at Headingley mainly, and you know, just watching him steam in, he really was an entertainer. He was someone that you just felt could make things happen, and that's clearly the way he played the game. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please do subscribe. Also, you know, give the show a rating. It does help to get the podcast out there. Also, just tell a friend, people that you think might like to listen to this, just please spread it the old-fashioned way by word of mouth. That would be great. You can also follow us on Twitter at Homer Cricket, or you can follow me personally. I'm at WillRowe2. You can also contact the show by email. It's podcast@mcc.org.uk. And once again, a massive thank you to the ECB and the BBC for allowing us to use commentary clips there during that podcast. Plenty of blowers in that one, which made me smile a lot. Right, next week, next Monday, the podcast is with Marcus Truscothick. It was an absolute pleasure to catch up with Marcus. It was down in Taunton. I went down earlier in the summer to have a chat with him about his final test century. It was against Sri Lanka, and it was here at Lords. Once again, many thanks for listening. This has been the Lords Cricket Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.